This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The push to ban gay and lesbian adoption is becoming the next battle in the nation's culture wars. Efforts are underway in some 16 states to pass laws or constitutional amendments to prevent same-sex couples from adopting. Activists are hoping the issue will do in 2006 what the campaign against gay marriage did in the last election: energize conservatives to come out and vote, but it's not at all clear if they'll succeed. In the meantime, the battle is brewing between those who say children do best in families headed by a mother and a father, and those who disagree and say adoption laws based on personal judgments about morality are misguided and insensitive to the many children in desperate need of loving families. Up next on Point, the fight against gay adoption. Joining me now from Washington is Andrea Stone, congressional correspondent for USA Today. She's written a number of recent articles on the issues surrounding gay adoption. And Andrea, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Lay out the landscape just a bit, if you would, about this debate around the nation. How widespread is this movement to stop gay and lesbians from adopting?
Well, I think it's just sort of starting to percolate. I mean, Florida has had a law banning gays from adopting since 1977, during the Anita Bryant days back then. But really, we haven't seen much going on since then. A couple of years ago, there were some court challenges to the Florida law, which did not get overturned.
And now that and Florida is the only state that has an outright ban on gays and lesbians from adopting, right?
On both couples and single people. Mississippi bans gay couples from adopting, although if you're single, you have a better chance to do it. And Utah also bans all unmarried couples, whether you're straight or gay. So that would include homosexuals as well.
Awesome. So what about new initiatives? What's going on?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Ohio was the first in 2006 to actually introduce a bill in the state legislature that would ban all gays from adopting. And while we haven't seen any official bills being dropped, there's at least 16 states, including Ohio, where it's being talked about, where this is starting to be seen as the next kind of step. This is especially happening in some of the states that have already passed amendments to their constitution banning same-sex marriage. You know, in 2004, we saw 11 states had ballot initiatives and 11 states passed them. Mm-hmm. And some of those same states, again, Ohio, but also Georgia and Kentucky, they're talking about this now as sort of the next, for them, natural step.
Right. Now, in your reporting, you've reported that some 16 states are considering beginning to take steps toward laws or constitutional amendments. What would they do? Would they all do more or less the same thing, or are they framed differently?
Well, I think, again, some of them are just in sort of the talking stages, and it's things that adoption professionals and gay rights groups and conservative groups are starting to talk about. And don't think it's something that the national conservative groups are sort of focusing on. They still think that they have a lot more work to do on the marriage issue, because there's at least six more states that may see that on the ballot in November, and as well as we're going to see the Senate vote in June on the amending the U.S. Constitution, which is something that has not gotten enough votes in the past. So the national groups are still looking at marriage, but I think in the states, and again, marriage and adoption are state issues that people are talking about drafting legislation, and in some states they're talking about both drafting legislation and constitutional amendments in case one or the other doesn't work. Like in Ohio, for instance, where they have introduced legislation, the conservative groups there say if that doesn't go through, if it just dies in committee, then we're going to try and get signatures and get it on the ballot.
Very interesting. Andrea Stone, USA Today, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Appreciate your help. Thanks a lot. We're joined now from Dayton, Ohio, by Greg Quinlan. He's founder of the Pro Family Network, a conservative Christian organization based in Dayton, Ohio. Earlier this month, a bill was introduced in the Ohio legislature, as Andrea mentioned, that would ban all adoptions and foster care by gays and lesbians. Pro Family is the principal organization backing the bill. And Greg Quinlan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Give me, tell me about what's going on in Ohio.
Well, in Ohio, we decided that since we had have now changed our state constitution to define marriage as one man, one woman, mm-hmm. recognizing no other relationship as legal or binding in the state of Ohio, that the next thing to do was to also take that definition and apply that fully to the family and to children. And because of what happened in Florida, what wasn't mentioned in your previous segue, at least what I heard, is that in Florida, that bill was, their law was challenged.
Right.
And that challenge went all the way to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, U.S., where it was upheld. Then it was challenged to the United States Supreme Court, where Justice Kennedy decided not to hear it, and that gave it cert. So we now have constitutional precedence for this bill.
I see.
For this action.
So why is this? Greg Quinlan, tell me why you feel this bill is necessary. Why the ban?
Because we have had several people approach me who have grown up in homosexual households, and they have talked about how horrible the story and the situation was. We also have.
But wait. What do you mean? How horrible the situation was?
I'm going to tell you that if you.
Go ahead.
That we have people now who are out and open homosexuals who raise their children in that environment, who are willing to testify before the committee to say that that was not the environment they should have raised their children. We've actually got one woman who actually had to apologize to her son for raising him in that environment. We also have a young man who was adopted by a gay minister, not by his partner because you couldn't do that in Ohio, who talks about what happened to he and his adoptive brother. His adoptive brother became a male prostitute and has since died of AIDS. He talked about the continual predator relationships that he had with his father's friends.
And Greg Quinlan, you feel that the problem that these people had in their adoptive families was because they were gay or lesbian?
No, I said the problem that these children have was because their parents were gay or lesbian.
Right, that's what I intended to ask. But, I mean, couldn't you say, I mean, the nation's penitentiaries and prisons are full of people who were raised in heterosexual families. I mean, I don't understand the connection of people who have trouble in their families and to make the link to their parents as being gay or lesbian.
The state has the obligation to put children in the optimum situation. And even the healthcare experts, which you apparently are going to supposedly have one on afterwards, usually say that it's better for a child to grow up in a household where there's a mother and a father. And that's what the experts say. And even though there's a host of organizations that say they do not support our bill or support homosexual parenting, that's not true of their membership.
Now, what experts? Because, you know, we're going to be talking to some people later in the hour who are going to cite all kinds of studies that show there's no relationship between what's better for a child in terms of whether his parents are straight or gay. You're talking about experts who say it is a problem for children to be parented by gay and lesbians. What experts?
Yes. Well, some of those experts are the children who grew up in those atmospheres, in those relationships. But some of those experts also happen to be Dr. Paul Cameron, of the Family Research Institute, Dr. Joseph Nicolosi of the National Association for Research and Therapy on Homosexuality, the American College of Pediatrics. There are several organizations who don't support homosexual adoption or homosexual parenting.
Hmm. Greg Quinlan, let me ask you this. The fact is gays and lesbians are already raising children across the country, including Ohio. So aren't these laws simply going to be denying legal protections to children in these families?
No. Actually, what this law will do is protect those children from... There's no legal protection now for homosexuals who are raising children unless it's their biological child.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let's paint a scenario. There's a mother with a biological child who, let's say, is living with a partner for 12 years who is the co-parent. That child does not have the same constitutional protections with that co-parent if that co-parent can't adopt.
No, that's correct. They don't, and they should not.
Well, why? Well, how does that help the child?
Because they don't have a marital situation. Because it doesn't help the child, because the child is not getting the benefit of a mother and a father.
So you're saying that if the biological mother dies and the child is left with the co-parent, that child would be better off being handed over to foster care and state custody than staying with the co-parent?
That child would not be left with the co-parent.
And you think that the child, I mean, that's a hard argument for me to swallow. You think the child would be better off in that situation?
Well, I mean, I knew when I was coming on here that would be the argument. It would get to be a hard argument to swallow. There is better situations out there. And right now we've got our own board of, one of our vice president of our board of directors has adopted 9 children. And in that situation, they did that based on the fact that the mother passed away and the father was no longer able to take care of those children.
Mm-hmm. Greg Quinn, let me ask you.
There are a lot of people out there who will adopt children. And then we're going to hear, and I know what's coming, we're going to hear about how many children there are in the foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers are exaggerated, and it's not true. Of the 3,000 children in the state of Ohio in foster care right now, more than two-thirds of them are in temporarily placed, meaning their parents are being adjudicated, or their parents are ill, or they're being placed temporarily in a foster care situation with another family member because of that situation.
Okay, Greg Quinlan, you're right that we are going to be talking in the hour ahead about the situation with the foster children. Let me just ask you one more question specifically about Ohio. Are the chances good that this is going to pass, in your view?
No, not this year it isn't, but in the same way that we had the Defense of Marriage Act took us 8 years to pass it, it'll probably take us 8 years to pass this, and we do intend to stick with it until it passes.
Greg Quinlan, thank you very much for joining us. I'm very grateful.
Thank you.
Greg Quinlan is founder of the Pro Family Network, a conservative Christian organization based in Dayton, Ohio. Joining us for the rest of the hour to discuss this issue is Robert Warnoff. He's the director of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgendered, and Questioning Services at the Child Welfare League of America, based in Washington, D.C. The Child Welfare League has been on the forefront of child welfare services for more than 80 years. And Robert Warnoff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Anthony.
A little bit later, we're going to be joined by Matt Staver. He's going to join us from Orlando, Florida. He's the president and general counsel of Liberty Council, an organization which advocates for the traditional family unit in America. But, Robert, let me start with you, if I could. You heard my discussion with Greg Quinlan, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you would like to sort of chime in there. Let's start with what he says the experts say about this being bad for children.
Sure. You know, those who support these bans are trying very, very hard to politicize an issue that really has no business being politicized. You know, the placement of children, particularly children in the foster care system, placing these children in permanent, stable, loving homes is really not a political issue. It really is a child welfare issue. That's why every major national child welfare and child health organization, including the Child Welfare League of America, the National Foster Parent Association, the North American Council on Adoptable Children, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, we all oppose these bans. We don't have a political agenda here. Our only agenda really is the safety and the well-being of children and families.
Hmm. And what's the best argument in favor of the children against these kinds of bans?
Sure. You know, they're contrary to what Mr. Quinlan said, the numbers of children in foster care really are not exaggerated. There are well over 500,000 children in America's foster care system right now. These are children who do not have permanent, stable, loving homes. That is our goal. Our goal is to find a home for every single child. Every child deserves stability. Every child deserves a permanent family that lasts long after they get out of foster care. And that is our goal. And so the best argument that we have is based on 30 years of sound, valid social science, policies, our standards, and our practice. The Child Welfare League of America has almost 900 member agencies around the country. Those member agencies serve millions and millions of children and family every year. And again, contrary to what Mr. Quinlan says, our membership does support our efforts in this area.
Rob Warnoff, can you give me a sense, too, of what your take is on how this debate and battle is brewing across the country? I mean, I read news accounts, and we're talking about USA Today, as we heard from the reporter at the top of the hour, is reporting that 16 states are beginning to have discussions, beginning steps to push for constitutional amendments, laws. Is this becoming the sort of next step to the gay marriage debate? And is it going to begin to dominate as we move toward the next election?
Yes and no. It is the next step. And no, I don't believe it's going to dominate. You know, Florida passed its law in 1977. Since then, no state passed a similar law. And there's a reason why. Every state needs to do everything it can to place children in homes. These laws don't help them do that. But you're right, it is an extension of marriage, and people need to understand that they are very, very different issues. I talk about that when I work with gay rights organizations, and to say this isn't about marriage, this isn't really even about gay rights. This is about placing children in stable, loving homes. That's why it's a child welfare issue. And we need to do all that we can to do that. Ways that we're going about that is people need to understand that, for example, before Massachusetts legalized gay marriage,
right,
there were no legally married gay people in America, right? Now, at this moment, there are hundreds of thousands and probably millions of children being raised by gay people in America right now. I think you brought that up in the earlier segment. That's very important to realize. Another big consideration is, guess who pays for children in foster care? the taxpayers. These are federally funded programs that run into the billions, with a B, billions of dollars every single year. The federal government is placing much more of an emphasis on permanent homes, and they attach federal dollars to that. They reward or they penalize states for doing a good job or not doing a good job in finding permanent homes for children. They reduce the number of months they expect a child to be in foster care from 18 months to 12 months. And putting that kind of pressure on a state is really a tremendous pressure. States will be penalized with federal dollars if they don't do all that they can to find permanent homes. Right now, no state is doing enough to find permanent homes as it is.
Okay, Robert Warnoff, we have one more voice we want to get in here to mix this up a little bit. It's Matt Staver. He's president and general counsel of Liberty Council based in Orlando, Florida, a nonprofit organization advocating for the traditional family unit in the U.S. Liberty Council filed an amicus brief on behalf of legislators last year in order to uphold the law in Florida, which bans adoption by gays and lesbians. And Matt Staver, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
You know, respond, if you would, to a couple of the points that Robert Warnoff made, that this is really not a political issue. This is about what's best for kids.
I think anyone who realizes that or thinks this is not a political issue certainly is not aware of what the agenda is, and it definitely is a political issue. You can talk about it being rhetoric for children, but by and large, this has become a political issue. And I think it really should be focused on the best interest of children. And the best interest of children, and there are thousands of sociological studies that have concluded this, is that they're raised in a home with a mom and a dad. And Florida's law, as an example, bans homosexual or gay adoption because that is permanent placement. And Florida's best interest is to put children either in a home where they can be raised with a mom and a dad, or at least that have a potential to be raised with a dual-gender household.
But
and
Matt Staver,
adoption excludes that.
Yeah, thousands of studies. I keep hearing references from both sides in this of studies, thousands of studies. Studies show. I'm flummoxed by the reference to all these studies because you guys say exactly the opposite here. Are there really thousands of studies that show kids do better in heterosexual households?
There are thousands of studies that conclude this one proposition, and that is kids do better when they're raised with a mom and a dad. That's undisputed. Where some of the
is that true, Robert Warnoff? Is that undisputed?
No, I'm sorry. It is very much in dispute.
Well, no, that's not
true.
It's not in dispute. What is in dispute is some of the studies, because they're fairly new, is whether or not there's a difference between children that are raised in heterosexual households. But even Stacy and Biblarts, researchers from California who support gay marriage, have concluded that girls that are raised in a lesbian household are more likely and more frequently engaging in sexual activity at an earlier age in a more experimental fashion. And so they have concluded that from their own research, even though they are nevertheless still in favor of same-sex marriage. So even within those studies, there's a lot of concerns that need to be raised. But outside of whether you have heterosexual versus gay households, the general studies on children being raised in a single-gender versus a dual-gender household are undisputed that children do best when they're raised with a mom and a dad.
Let me let Robert Warnoff recite some of his own studies or respond to that.
Great, thank you. You know, where do these studies, where are they posted? Where are they, how are they disseminated? Usually through professional organizations, the American Psychological Association, Psychiatric Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, National Association of Social Workers, all of these national prominent professional organizations post studies on their websites that support that there is really no difference between in the outcomes of children who are raised by gay or lesbian single parents or gay or lesbian couples as opposed to heterosexual parents. The studies that are being talked about now are not posted on these national professional associations' websites because they are not accredited.
Dave is calling from Boston. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. I'm calling from Massachusetts, and
right.
In many ways, I guess I'm the worst nightmare of the movement to ban gay adoption. I have a 2.5-year-old son with my partner. My partner and I are very normal in a committed relationship. We live in the suburbs. And we love our son very much. And I guess what I wanted to point out is, yes, this is becoming a political issue, and it's becoming a political issue because it's in the stream of what began with the marriage debate. And, you know, so even your first guest from Ohio said, this is our next step. Mm-hmm. So we worked on marriage. Now we're going to work on adoption to prevent gay people from adopting. What's the next step is what I want to know. This is definitely part of an agenda. I mean, it's something that I think America has to open their eyes to. You know, there are thousands of kids in our foster care system. There are thousands of children from overseas. Are they better off in orphanages or in foster care being bounced around and so forth? It's just absolutely reprehensible and actually very hateful. And I think, you know, it makes me so angry. And I think it's something that, you know, I'm going to raise my son, he's going to go to school, and I'm going to be present at the PTA meetings, and I'm going to be out there. And I believe that there's a movement across the country for all of those parents, those gay parents of children, to do that. So this isn't something that we're just going to sort of, anyway.
Yeah, Dave, no, I appreciate your point. You express yourself eloquently, and let me throw your concerns over to Matt Staver. Matt, Dave sounds like a pretty stable parent doing best by his kids. What do you say to him?
Well, I say, on average, you know, if you open up this issue to gay adoption, you can't simply choose the best parents. And the problem is that when you open it up, as Rob, you know, represents the gay and lesbian and transgender and questioning youth and all of that other category. This opens up a hodgepodge of sexual activity or sexual preferences that cover the entire gamut, many of which are confusing to children. And children are already traumatized first by the fact that they are not with their original or natural moms or dads as they've gone through the adoption process and even into a foster care system. They will even be more confused oftentimes by being put into a situation which itself is a political, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, or whether or not everyone is political, it is in fact a political general environment with a sexually confusing general surrounding social structure. And I think the real issue is, what is the long-term best interest of children? Is it to prefer them to be placed in a home with a dual-gender mom and dad, or put them in a same-sex household where they don't even have that possibility? I think our foster care system and our foster care laws need to be radically reformed. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of heterosexual parents that are ready, willing, and able. They've been certified for adoption. I know many of them in Florida myself, but they're not able to adopt because of the bureaucracy that slows down this process.
Is that so, Robert Warnoff? Is it just a question of bureaucracy that is keeping qualified heterosexual couples from taking care of this foster child problem?
No, absolutely not. I kind of wish that were the case. And first of all, Matt, I don't really represent gay and lesbian issues. I represent America's oldest and largest child welfare organization. We're about as august and mainstream as it gets. And we certainly do not have a gay agenda. We have a child welfare agenda. That is our only agenda. I wish we had more families. Everybody wishes we had more families. We simply do not have enough families. So the choices really aren't between, are you going to take this foster child out of foster care and place the child with a gay family or a straight family? We don't have those choices. Children languish in foster care because we don't have enough families, and I hope that this show can do a little more to do that kind of outreach to families to come forward.
AJ is calling from Potsdam, New York. Hi, AJ.
Good day.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, a number of things. To begin with, one of your guests said something about you can't pick the best parents. Well, you know what? That cuts both ways. And he may have testimonials of kids that have ended up in unfortunate situations with same-gender couples. Well, you know what? That happens with heterosexual couples. It happens in biological families. And when you look at the numbers, and no, I can't give you the studies because I can't cite these things to you. But I read a number of things. I read the professional journals. I read the mainstream newspapers. And I go with experts, not who start with an answer and work backwards. You know, the universe is 6,000 years old. read your Bible. The universe is 6,000 years old. I'm sorry. I look at the empirical world. I make the observation, and I derive the knowledge from that. I don't start at the answer I wish to have because of preconvictions or bigotry or hate that these people have. Let me just end with this. These people call themselves Christians. What the devil is Christ-like about any of them?
Okay, AJ, we appreciate your passion, and I, and given the passion, I got to let Matt Staver respond to your call.
Well, I think, and I certainly wouldn't want rhetoric to come up to trying to kill the messenger because you don't like the message, and I think that any of this rhetoric should exclude that.
No, but Matt, in fairness to AJ, I mean, I think his point is that you're starting with a political position and then sort of working backwards. Is that fair?
In fairness to AJ and anyone else who deals with this issue, do not attack the messenger because you don't agree with the message. That's common courtesy. It's common sense. Let's look at the issue.
Sure.
Not trying to blanket someone or some group and say that they're Christian or they're not Christian. You know, the fact is the studies that I wrote a book about a year and a half ago that dealt with many of these issues, and I read thousands of studies. These are people who have no political agenda. They're not even dealing with the same-sex marriage issue. And those studies, and they're published in all kinds of reputable scientific journals, concluded what I have said at the very beginning, and that is children do best when they are raised with a mom and a dad. That proposition is...
Matt, I'm going to jump in just because we've covered this ground, and AJ, you know, his passion notwithstanding, raised a point that I'd like you to respond to. And the point is this: you have a political agenda, and you're working backwards from it. I'm not saying you do. I'm saying that's what AJ said, and I would like you to respond to that.
I don't have a political agenda and working backwards from it. I think we need to look at the actual issue here, and that is what is in the best interest of children, irrespective of what person's political agenda is. And when you put and in reference to studies that have come out, for example, as to what kind of environment children are going to be best suited in, that's, I think, one of the things that we need to look at. I think also with this entire issue of homosexual adoption or gay adoption or gay marriage, the real prime focus needs to be what's in the best interest of children. And despite the fact or the statement that there are not enough people out there, we have, and I've got personal experience with, I've got people in my own office that have been on an adoption waiting list for more than almost 3 years now, and they can't adopt.
We're going to go very quickly to Deanie, who's calling from Boston. Hi, Deanie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, please. What's on your mind?
I'm a 35-year-old woman, and I've been out for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been told by many people that I'd be a wonderful mom. People would expect me to have kids, and I'd like to be able to finish school before, you know, I mean, I don't have to worry if I'm going to be fertile in 2 years. I want to be able to adopt if I want to adopt. I have friends who are my age who are adopting, who are straight, and who think I'd be a great mom. I just, it's funny, you know, it's like, why do I have to be an outlaw? I'm a nice person, you know?
Matt Staver, can you talk to Deanie a little bit? I mean, she feels like an outlaw because of this issue.
Well, you know, I'm sure Deanie's a wonderful person, and I don't know Deanie, so I really can't comment regarding her specifically. But what I can do is comment about a general policy. And, for example, looking at Florida, and contrary to what Rob said that there was no other state that has adopted a law since Florida's 1977 law. But there's only a few states in the country that actually have laws that expressly permit gay adoption. The majority of states either don't have anything that specifically address that issue, or many of them, or at least five or six of them, have specific laws that or rulings that prohibit it. Many of them have never really addressed the issue. But I think when you look at a general policy, obviously there's exceptions to the rule. Deanie may make a wonderful parent, and I'm not questioning Deanie's potential to be a parent. But when you're looking at a general policy, you either have to open the door or shut the door. And when you open the door, you open the door to Deanie, and you open the door to the entire other possible world out there. And when you're looking at that possible world, the pause that we ought to have before we do that is to say, what are the long-term consequences of children? Not look at whether or not they're in foster care now, because we can reform that. I'm telling you that the foster care laws need to be reformed, and there are people ready to adopt. But let's look at the long-term consequences. Let's not experiment or rush into this quickly and experiment with our children in the possible consequences that this would have on them. And I think
Matt
Staver, what the issue is.
Matt Staver, stand by. I want to get Rob Warrenoff in on this conversation. Rob, you know, in the last election, the whole debate about gay marriage was described in many ways as a wedge issue, that it energized the base of the conservative movement and got a lot of people out to the polls. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as happening at the next election around this issue?
I think they'll try to do that, but I think they're doing it on the backs of the children, and that's not right. They're also doing it on the backs of the taxpayers who actually have to bear the brunt of the costs for caring for these children. It really, as I said at the beginning of my statement, it really is not a political issue. Matt was right. We have the best interests of children at heart. That is our priority. I guess my question to Matt is, why wouldn't an organization like the Child Welfare League of America or the American Foster Parent Association or National Association of Social Workers, why, since we all support opposing these bans, why wouldn't we have the best interests of children at heart? Of course we do. The best way to go about this is on a case-by-case basis. That is the best approach to this. That is the best way to make sure that a child is being placed with the right family. You know, it's not like a family can just walk up to a child welfare agency and say, hi, please give me a child. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of background. I can say this from a personal experience. I'm a licensed foster and adoptive parent. You go through major screening. They visit your home. They inspect your windowsills for lead. They do FBI checks. You go through hours and hours of training, interviews, background screenings, references. So it's not as though really anybody can walk up and say, I want a child. By the time you pass all of that rigorous scrutiny, it really is up to the child welfare agency to match you with the best child and match the child with the best possible family. Well, that is the way that it's always been done. This is not a new experiment. The door has been open for years and years and years. Children have been raised by gay and lesbian people for decades, for longer than that. We have research for the last 3 years. And contrary to what Matt also said about Stacey and Bibler's, their research really does support that there is no difference. And I have something in front of me and I can just simply
quote
well,
hold that for a second because I want to invite another voice into this conversation. Kathy James is joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida. She's the non-biological mother of a six-year-old boy who she co-parents with her lesbian partner of 11 years. She also coordinates the Tampa Bay chapter of Family Pride, which works on behalf of gay and lesbian parents. And she recently testified before the Florida Senate Committee on Children and Families earlier this month. Kathy James, welcome.
Thank you.
So I'd like to hear your concern as the non-biological mother of a six-year-old boy who you co-parent with a lesbian partner of 11 years. What are you concerned about when, in Florida, you can't adopt?
Well, I'm concerned about his legal protection.
Mm-hmm.
I am the financial supporter of our family. My partner is a stay-at-home mom. We felt that that was very important for our family, that she not go back into the workplace, that she stay home and take care of things at home and be there when he gets off the bus from kindergarten. And because I am the financial support of our family, it would be devastating to us if anything were to happen to my partner.
Well, what's the worst fear?
I have no legal protection.
Sure. So you have no legal protection. So God forbid if something did happen to your partner, what's the worst fear? And what happens to your son?
The worst fear is that he would be placed in the Florida foster care system and cost the taxpayers of Florida thousands of dollars unnecessarily because he has an employed parent, me. And in addition, I would have no legal standing to request visitation.
Matt Staver, this is the question that I was asking Greg Quinlan from Ohio at the very top of the show about. In Kathy's situation, in the situation of Kathy's family, is her son really better off being taken away from her, with whom he has lived for 11 years and placed in foster care if his biological mother should die?
Well, those fears are absolutely unfounded, especially in Florida, because Florida does permit a temporary foster placement, which could go on for other longer periods of time, but does not permit the permanent placement in terms of an adoption. So if something were to happen to her partner, that doesn't mean, and in fact it would be to the contrary, that this child would be removed and put into a foster care. She would certainly be eligible to continue to have that same relationship.
That's correct, but any of my partner's siblings, any heterosexual in the state of Florida, would be able to adopt my son, and I would have no legal standing. And all I would need is for one family lawyer family judge that I was assigned to, who agrees with your archaic thinking, to take my son away from me. And that is sad and pathetic.
Let's take a call from Benjamin, who's calling from Boston. Hello, Benjamin.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I have a quick 2 points, but let me go with the first one. The first one is that I think It's contradictory for gays and lesbians to be asking for adoption because they choose a lifestyle that they know that the consequences of that lifestyle is that you're not going to have a child or children in that process. So I find it very ironical. And the second point is that the idea that because you don't have enough people to adopt children means that you can anybody can adopt is wrong because you have no jobs doesn't mean that you should ask me to go and get into the process of being a scam artist or getting into a prostitution.
Okay, Benjamin, I want to take your first point and throw it over to Kathy James. Kathy James, if you don't mind responding to Benjamin from Boston, who says gays and lesbians choose a lifestyle, therefore, you know, this idea that they should have the right to adopt children shouldn't necessarily be accorded to them.
Well, you know, this is not a lifestyle. You know, living on a golf course in Miami Beach is a lifestyle. This is how God created me. God loves me. He doesn't make mistakes. He has created our family with us. My son knows that he has a father in heaven, which is God, and it's pretty 1977 thinking, and you know it's very important, I think, for the gay and lesbian community to come out to people, to let people know that 99% of the things that we do are the same as non-gay people,
mm-hmm.
and we're touching on one aspect of it that is. We love. We go to Publix to grocery shop. We
right.
go to church on Sundays.
Rob Warnoff, chime in here mm-hmm. because I'm interested to know your position on the issue of the second parent adoption piece of this discussion.
Yeah, it really is very important. If Kathy were the one who were to die, her family would not have access to her Social Security benefits. I mean, that's pretty significant. She is the primary breadwinner. Kathy, you're the only breadwinner in your family, right?
Right.
Right. So if something happened to you, what are they supposed to do economically, the family, that obviously any other family would enjoy?
Well, our time is running down. I'm going to come back to Matt Staver for a final thought on that. Respond, if you would, to Rob's question. What is Kathy's family supposed to do?
Well, I think the issue goes beyond economics. I mean, economics is something that can be addressed, but the issue, I think, goes to the environment in which you would be placing children and their identity as to who they are. And I think they would be placed in an environment where their gender identity would be, frankly, very confused and, I think, in by and large, in most situations, very politicized. I don't think that's in the best interest of our children. I don't think we should experiment with our children. I don't think we should put them into a political pressure cooker in many cases. And, in fact, while there may be some places that are doing a wonderful job, by and large, relationships male-male are notoriously short-lived as opposed to female-female relationships that typically have a longer span. So I think when we're putting children into these situations, we need to look at the entire picture, and the entire picture is more than an anecdotal story by an individual.
Okay, Matt Staver, we're going to have to leave the debate there because unfortunately we're out of time, but clearly this is not the last word in this debate. I want to thank all my guests, Kathy James, who joined us from St. Petersburg, Florida. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Robert Warnoff is a director at the Child Welfare League of America in Washington. Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Anthony.
And Matt Staver, President and General Counsel of Liberty Counsel in Orlando, Florida. Thank you, Matt Staver.
Thank you.
This is On Point.